And backstage now with Richard Egar, who has conducted the Four Seasons by Vivaldi. There's a chronology to this program in that the first piece is the youngest and then the next is the next youngest. But any significance in that?
No, actually, Purcell, of course, comes before the Vivaldi. They're fairly contemporary, but Purcell is a little bit younger. No, it's just I was asked to do the Four Seasons very happily. It's something that, you know, these great pieces, they're very maligned because they're abused in lifts and elevators and hold on telephones, and you hear the Four Seasons everywhere. The hotel I stay in London had a 20-bar segment of Summer running for 5 months in the lobby, which drove me crazy, and they had Christmas carols in March. But these pieces like Pachelbel Canon and, you know, the Hallelujah Chorus, they are amazing pieces. There's no wonder that they're famous. So it's always a pleasure to do these pieces, especially with having done them with Giuliano, because he's just such an artist. It's wonderful to work with him. It's the first time we've worked together, and I must say it was an absolute pleasure. And the Haydn is a... I think what's good about all of this music, it's really for a public. They're not for high-ranking
officials. The crown.
It's not for a sort of elite. It's public music, and you can certainly hear that in the Haydn, you know, all the jokes, the clock, and even the fact that the symphony opens with an incredibly dark and serious adagio in the first minute and a half. You think it's going to be an incredibly deep and meaningful symphony, and the rest of the symphony is a complete hoot.
But he kind of, at that point, he writes this for a London audience, of course.
Absolutely.
And it's his second visit, and I think he brings it with him, right? He doesn't write it there, he brings it with him from Vienna.
And he knows his public. He's like Handel in that way. Handel was perfect at judging his public, whichever country
he was
in.
But he was hugely popular at this point
absolutely.
As well. He had a lot of freedom.
Massive, absolutely massive. And that was something that was relatively new to Haydn, because he'd been in service at Esterházy for decades, and he was suddenly let out and was able to spread his wings and go and visit places and officially let his compositions be heard in other places. So it must have been a wonderful release for him, and he must have...
And in his 60s, which was a good age in those days.
Absolutely a good age. So he must have been having a very, very good time. And I was talking to some of the players about this, you know, musicians always end up talking about which composers they'd like to have met. And I think we all agree that Haydn would have been someone that would have been a really good chap to hang out with. Unlike in Mozart, he would have been fascinating to come across as a character, but perhaps would have been a slightly irritating character.
Right.
Whereas Haydn, there's something, and people say this of him, that he was an incredibly generous, genial, sort of normal, healthy human being. And I think when you play his music, you always feel better having played it.
And he could tell you stories about Mozart and Beethoven
as well. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yes.
Let me take you back to the Vivaldi and this point you made about it becoming elevator music and becoming music that everybody is familiar with. What do you want to bring to that music then every time you perform? This is something that you're, as familiar as the general public is with this music, you're astonishingly familiar with it because of your background. Are you trying to bring a new interpretation to it every time? Does that depend on you? Does it depend on the ensemble? What are you trying to bring to
it? I think the idea of a new interpretation, every time you play a piece, it should be a new interpretation. There was a sort of idea when early music started that we would get back to some kind of truth about a piece of music. And actually, the more we've looked, the more clear it is that subjectivity and individual approach is essential in this music. And, you know, playing the Four Seasons, it's going to be different every time, particularly with a different violinist. It should be different every time. And Giuliano, his fantasy is just limitless. So I can imagine, you know, touring with him with this piece for years and it being different every time, because he has ultimate fantasy with this music, ultimate control over it as well. You can't have the fantasy without the control. And that's what these pieces need. They don't need to be listened to in elevators or indeed even on CDs. There's nothing like hearing these pieces live and seeing them and experiencing them live, because it's part of the delivery is watching the soloist and the freedom that the soloist has in this repertoire. It's so exciting.
All of the music in this program, as we mentioned earlier, is pre-romantic, so to speak.
That's a very loaded term.
Well, okay. Well, let's allow it for the moment. You're dealing with a symphony orchestra that deals in big romantic music. But that said, your compatriots and your colleagues in the early music world, Roger Norrington and Nick McGeegan, who have played here in the last couple of years, have given very good reports of the Philadelphia Orchestra. You know, as a symphony orchestra, they have a great capacity for getting a handle on this music. Has that been your experience as well?
Yes, I think what the key is that you have a bunch of musicians who are fantastic players. They are wonderfully flexible musicians, and that's the key. It's not every symphony orchestra that you can go to and do that with. I've been to a couple of sort of jobs worth orchestras where not everybody, and it doesn't take many within a symphony orchestra. If you've got two or three people who've been sitting in their seat for 30 odd years and have turned off to music, particularly if they're the principals, then it can be absolute death because it infects the whole rest of the section. But no, the musicians here are so open and have been incredibly welcoming and open to some of my perhaps crazy ideas or new ideas. And that's all you can ask of a musician, because if, you know, I've spent the last 30 years in early music, if you like, so I've read a lot and I've done a lot of playing with old instruments, which the members of the Philadelphia Orchestra haven't. But what you need are people who are just open and will respond. And I don't come and give a list of early music rules when I come to an orchestra like this, because you don't have time. If you've got maybe 6 or 7 hours rehearsal to do a program, you can't spend, you know, an hour and a half giving an early music lecture about Note in a Gale, or it's just not time. So what I try and do is I just speak to them as a musician and speak in colours, speak in terms of length of note and colour of note, and try and convey what I see in the music, in this very romantic music that we've been playing, that you've heard in the programme. See, for me, there's no difference between the range of emotional states between Mahler, Tchaikovsky, and Rameau and Purcell.
And certainly Vivaldi.
It's just a different style of music. All of that stuff that you hear in later music is also contained in Baroque music. It's not less expressive. In fact, in a way, it's more expressive. It's faster. The ranges of expression come quicker and change quicker than they do in a slow movement of Tchaikovsky symphony. You're dealing with a really long, drawn-out, slow movement and the predominantly slow music. In Baroque music, that can change, you know, after 10 seconds, especially the early music, the 17th century music, the earliest sonatas, they change every 4 or 5 bars. So you're dealing with, actually, in a way, more natural human emotion.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.